to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Today we have Laura B. from Johnson City, Texas. So come on in, Laura. Welcome.
Thank you so much, and thanks for everybody that does the work to keep this meeting going. And I'm really excited to be here today. My name is Laura. I'm alcoholic, and truly, by the grace of God, I've been sober since April the 6th of 1987. And it's always a privilege to participate in any capacity in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I really love Step 12. So, there's not really a step I wouldn't be, I would be opposed to, but I really love step 12. I'm excited to have some time to share about that. I just will qualify very quickly that, I've always just been maladjusted. That's the simplest way to put it. I've never been, prior to a drink of alcohol, I was never comfortable in my own skin doing what I was doing with the people I was doing it with. I always had a lot of what I now know would be called anxiety, or just overdeveloped sense of self, right? I was just always acutely aware of how I was feeling and what I was doing and what you thought about how I was doing and were you going to interfere with what I wanted to do, and just this, me, 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 me constantly. And I just came out that way. There's no, I don't know, right? And then I found alcohol. And alcohol was relief for that, for me, for until it wasn't anymore. And then I was very fortunate that my family, I will say this, I for me it was never the first drink. The first drink never did anything for me except make me thirsty. And the second drink was a little bit better, but the third drink was my happy spot. And I love everything about how I feel when I get to drink three. And the sense of ease and comfort that comes, the separation from self that comes from that third drink. And it's not that I was cured of this bondage of self by drinking, but I got relief from it. I no longer cared what you thought. I was just drinking, and it didn't matter what else was going on. All that was happening was drinking, and that cost me everything that I had, but I didn't notice it while it was leaving. Right. It looked like I was making a series of decisions to get my way. And really, I was forfeiting myself and my value system and my family and my home and all the things that I had previously held dear and valued to get to that next drink. And I was very fortunate that my family, my parents were in recovery. My parents got into recovery in 1985, and so my father knew exactly what was going on, and really offered zero assistance. And I think that afforded me the opportunity to hit bottom. I really believe in that. It's one of my core values. Alcoholics don't change, in my experience, until the pain of change is less than the pain of staying the same, right? And if somebody had offered me a sandwich or $5 or a place to stay, you'd have a different speaker. I was very, very blessed that I didn't get any assistance while I was out there. And I was not very excited about it at the time. Let me be clear. Let me be clear to you that the lack of assistance I was receiving from the people in my life, I was not excited about that. And I had a tragic story to tell you around the lack of assistance that I was not receiving from the people that were supposed to care about me. But I believe it saved my life because I got to the end of, I got to pay consequences, and I got to suffer those consequences pretty quickly. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 17 in 1987, and I hated you guys, and I hated everything about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hated the meetings and the coffee and the prayer and the gratitude and the whole nine yards. It was just terrible. And they say, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, I was not. I was not. I wouldn't have crossed the room to get what you guys had. You know what I mean? I didn't want to be sober. Sober was the problem. Sober was not the solution. Sober was the problem. The people in my life wanted me to stop drinking. They had a problem with my drinking. But for me, that's where I found the only relief I could find. I can't stand how I feel when I'm not drinking. And so when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and it was just don't drink one day at a time, it's like, oh, well, good for you. And I believe that I got to stay because I didn't have anywhere else to go. I think if I'd had somewhere else to go, you'd have a different speaker, right? One of my old timers used to talk about seconds and inches. And I can really look back at my recovery and see that very clearly. I just got to stay. I'm very grateful for that. There was a lot of grace afforded to me in my early recovery because I did not have a desire to stop drinking. I did not have a desire to stay with you people. Did not. Everybody was so old, like my age now. You know what I mean? And that's the truth. Like I got sober with a bunch of people that were probably in their, mid-50s, and I just thought I had died and gone to hell. And they played bingo on Saturday nights, right? And I used to talk about that all the time, like, oh, goody, bingo with the blue hairs. We're living the dream now. You know what I mean? I didn't want any of that, but I didn't have anywhere else to go. And I'd been sober about, I had been sober 118 days. I was 118 days removed from my last drink. I'll say it like that. And I had a moment of clarity. And it wasn't that I wanted what you had, but I was crystal clear in that moment that I no longer wanted what I had. And the truth is, I didn't really believe I could get what you had. I didn't really believe you when you said you were free or happy or comfortable not drinking. I couldn't fathom that. But I didn't want to go back to the streets. And that afforded me the opportunity to stay, just enough to stay until I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous on accident. And my story is that I stayed busy in Alcoholics Anonymous in the fellowship and being of service for a little over 4 years. I did a tremendous amount of 12-step work, thank God. I had service commitments and I was in the middle of a home group. And I was connected to the members of my home group. And I got thirsty during those 4 years, but I was in the middle of a home group and I was connected and I was accountable and I had commitments. And I always, we hear in Alcoholics Anonymous a lot that people talking bad about this saying about meeting makers make it. And listen, nobody believes more than me that if all you do is go to meetings, there will come a time where that will not be sufficient for you, which is my experience. But because all I was doing was going to meetings, when the wheels fell off, I was at a meeting on accident. I went to a meeting every day at 5:30. It was habit. And I did that for over 5 years. And so when my life crumbled around me because I was still living on self-will and all I had done was stop drinking, right? I was at a meeting at 5:30 out of habit. And I raised my hand and said I needed help. And the real recovery for me began that day. That was June the 11th of 1991. Now, I didn't take a drink in between 87 and 91, but I was miserable. And I was dying in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I say all of that to you because when we talk about step 12, a lot of times we just default to carrying the message. But for me, there's three parts to step 12. And the critical, critical piece is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, right? Like until I could experience a relationship with a power greater than myself that solved the problem, right? I was just busy. It was like frenetic activity. I can't remember who it is. It's probably Scott Redman. God bless him. But he would talk about like newcomers in Alcoholics Anonymous are like dogs on linoleum floors. You know what I mean? There's like a lot of activity and we're not really making any progress. And that was what it was like for me, right? I was just very busy in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I wasn't recovering from untreated alcoholism. And there was just a tremendous amount of chaos. And so for me, the process of the steps, which the steps work without my permission, I don't have to believe it. I don't have to think it's going to work. I just have to take the action and I take that action and I end up in this place where I've had a spiritual awakening that I didn't want. I didn't even want a spiritual awakening. I didn't come here for a spiritual awakening, Right. I didn't even come here because I wanted to quit drinking. Right. I resisted all of it. I argued about all of it. I'm that sponsee. Right. I'm the yeah, but girl. Right. You tell me to do something and I figure out why that's not going to work and why it doesn't apply to me until I didn't have anything else to do. And so I did the work and I entered into this relationship with this power greater than me that loves me very, very much, apparently. And it turns out that I had been sitting in the middle of a miracle all of that time, and I couldn't even recognize it because I was stuck in self. But the truth is that April the 5th of 1987, I was dying from untreated alcoholism, and I was in the bondage of self, and there wasn't much hope for me. And April the 6th of 1987, I was sober. Now, I didn't see that as a big miracle at the time, I got to tell you. Right. But that's how this works. We talk about God's slow. God's not slow. My recognition of God's, presence in my life sometimes is slow. But I've had this spiritual awakening that says we practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thank goodness they put the word practice in there because it's practice for sure. It's easier today for me. I think the difference in long-term sobriety is just that I'm more comfortable doing the right thing. I trust that it's going to work out because I have experience with it working out. I'm not weller than or more spiritual than or any of that. I just have experience. Trust in the process, going through the process of the steps and getting the relief and the results that are promised. And so for me, and I say this all the time, but I practice 10 and 11. Just as it's outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous on a daily basis. And when I do that, 12 happens. 12 is not something that I have to seek or that I have to create. If I am practicing 10 and 11, 12 happens for me. 10 and 11 place me in a position to be connected to a power greater than me that gives me these principles to practice. I don't know what the principles are. How would I know what the principles are? You know what I'm about? Me. I'm about get even. I'm about vengeance, right? I want mercy for me and justice for you, right? That's how I'm wired, you know? So I need this power in my life that gives me these principles. It connects me to you. And when I don't know what to do, I can call you and say, here's the situation. Here's my plan. And I generally do know 100% of the time today that my idea is going to be bad. I pretty much trust that my perception is wrong all the time. But I trust that if I call one of you, you'll have this experience and you'll be able to share your experience with me. And I will hear this presence of this power. I will start to connect to the power through your experience that you're sharing with me. Right? So we practice these principles in our affairs. And then it says we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics. Because sometimes they just don't want help. That's a lesson I had to learn too, right? I've got help for people that haven't asked for it, right? My home group when I got sober in 1987 in Austin was the Northland Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we used to have a detox room there. It's gone now. But in a espresso bar, but there was a detox room and it had a cot, a cigarette machine, a payphone, and a chair. And we would go sit with the sick, suffering alcoholic, and it saved me. There's nothing like it. There's nothing that treats my, third world. I mean, I have these high class problems that I really want to focus on, right? What about the money? What about the kids? What about the job? What about the career? What about the friends? What about the boyfriend or the husband or whatever, fill in the blank. And then I sit in this chair next to this person who can't go an hour and a half without a drink. And all of a sudden, the problems that I was obsessing on are blessings, not burdens. 100% of the time, that's what a 12-step call does for me. Whatever the burden of the day is, suddenly it becomes a blessing because I'm sober enough to have financial trouble, or I'm sober enough to be a parent to these difficult children, or I'm sober enough to be an employee, or to have a home, right? Or to, I mean, any of the blessings in my life. And the 12-step work does that for me. There's all kinds of 12-step work. Everybody's got a niche in Alcoholics Anonymous. They used to say there's a nut for every bolt in AA, right? And so I, you know, my, I really love service that looks like mopping floors. I love being a greeter. I think being a greeter is the greatest job in Alcoholics Anonymous because I like saying hi to people, right? I like to visit. I want to hear your story. I want to welcome you. Everyone should feel welcomed in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's part of our 12-step work. If you've been 2 days without a drink and you can say hi to somebody that's been 1 day without a drink, that's a message, right? When we start to be able to look up and look people in the eye, that's a message. When we start to be able to greet and offer hope to the new person who's still suffering, that's a message. It's not always about going and getting the wet drunk and bringing them to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's not always about sponsorship. And I don't think, and I'm sure there's people that will argue with me about this because people will argue about anything, but I don't think speaking is service. I think it's a privilege to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. But it's not a service commitment, right? The service commitments are the people that do the behind the scenes work, right? The people that show up every day for this meeting to make sure that we have a place to come, right? The people that have the keys to the building, the coffee makers, the people that set the chairs out, that set the table up. These are the people that do the hard work in Alcoholics Anonymous, people that answer the phones, right? Where I live, they have the phones can be forwarded to members who will take calls, right? Taking those calls is so critical in Alcoholics Anonymous. Somebody calls and wants help. I want somebody on the other end of the phone that is carrying that message, that's not too busy to pick up their phone. And so there's a million different things I can do to be of service. Sponsorship is certainly one of them. That's the one I like, right? Because it's a one-on-one personal connection, watching God do for somebody, watching the miracle happen up close, front row seat. I love that. But again, it's not my business. The book says my main purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service, not to be of maximum service. And it took me a little while to learn that. Right? It's not my job to go insist that you stop drinking. I have clearly identified that you have a problem with your drinking. Therefore, you should sit next to me and let me explain to you what you need to do about your drinking problem. Right? We don't respond well to that. My job is to stay connected. And when I stay connected to the power that grants me this 24 hours of continued sobriety, I end up doing the service that that power needs for me to do. And frequently I can't see what that is. It's almost never convenient, right? People very rarely want to get sober at noon on a Saturday when I literally have nothing to do. It's always like during the World Series, you know what I mean? Or I'm just about to walk into a movie that I have been dying to see and the phone rings. So I'll finish with this because I think this is really how it works for me. Selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of what is wrong with me. It is the very core, this bondage of self. My alcoholism has one job, that's to separate me from, right? It needs to separate me from you. It needs to separate me from the power that is greater than me that keeps me sober today. It needs to separate me from the people that love and care about me. It needs to separate me from my values. Right? That's its job. So I'm in this bondage of self. If that is the root of the problem, then love and service is the solution. That's the opposite. So somewhere, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago, I had this shift in my mind where when the phone rang, I started seeing it as a gift. I started being able to see that this is God today saying, I love you. I want you to stay. Please stay. Because every opportunity that I have to get out of self, I'm treating my untreated. God is giving me an opportunity to treat the untreated alcoholism. right? Every opportunity that I have to pick up the phone and listen to whatever is going on in someone else's day is relief. I'm not thinking about me. I'm not in the bondage of self. I can't hear my untreated alcoholism when you're talking to me. It doesn't have a voice when I'm with you. It can't pick up the megaphone, right? There have been a million moments in my sobriety where I was not okay and where I could not do the thing that needed to be done next, or where I was 8 seconds away from blowing up my planet, right? And the phone rang. And I just learned to answer the phone. And so there are a couple of them that are significant. And this coming up week, it'll be 30 years since I buried my dad, which is hard to kind of fat. It's hard for me to kind of wrap my brain around that. But I had moved out to West Texas. I don't recommend living in West Texas. Good people. It's an awful, awful, awful little spot on the planet. God forgot to water. But good people, but I had moved out there and they were doing Alcoholics Anonymous wrong, you know, and, cause I clearly knew so much. And so when I got out there, there was this little gal that came up to me and asked me for my phone number. And this old timer said, don't bother giving her your phone number. She's been coming around forever and she's never going to make it. Well, it pissed me off. And God uses what he has at his disposal. And that day, what he had at his disposal was my arrogance. And what I thought was, of course, she's been coming forever and can't stay sober. You people have been trying to help her and you're doing it wrong. So I gave her my phone number, just sheer arrogance. And a couple of weeks later, this little gal came in and she had like 19 psychiatric diagnoses. None of them were alcoholism. And she asked me for my phone number and somebody said, well, we don't work with people like that because it's a mental health problem. And I thought, oh God, I'm going to give her again, just my arrogance. Of course she's not okay, right? She's here with y'all and you're right. Now, let me just clarify by saying that the people that I was judging had been sober decades, right? Obviously they knew what they were doing. So there's no validity in my judgment. It's just my judgment. So I gave Krista my phone number and I gave Mackenzie my phone number. And February the 28th of 94, I got a phone call and it was Mackenzie. She was suicidal and she was really convinced that she wasn't going to be okay. And I was saying something very compassionate back to her, like maybe if you pulled your head out of your butt and worked the steps, you wouldn't be suicidal. It was the language of a little richer than that. But, you know, I was communicating to her that perhaps we should just take the actions as they're outlined in the book and see where we ended up. And my other line rang and it was my mother. And she was calling to tell me that with 8.5 years of sobriety, my father had committed suicide. And I was just devastated and broken. And my world just fell apart. And I clicked back over to Mackenzie. Now, this is everything I'm going to tell you now is third-hand information because I don't remember this. But I clicked back over to Mackenzie and said, send AA. And she did. But what happened for Mackenzie in that moment is the clearest definition I could give you of how I believe God works in Alcoholics Anonymous, because it was my worst moment yet by a lot. But when I clicked back over to Mackenzie, she said I was screaming and I was crying. And she said she could hear what she would be doing to her daughter. And it stopped it for her. And Mackenzie just celebrated 30 years of continuous sobriety last November, right? Because nothing is wasted in God's economy in Alcoholics Anonymous. If I stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, he has the opportunity to take even my worst moment and turn it to something that is useful for someone. AA showed up and you sat around my kitchen table and you said all the right things and you did all the right things and you sounded like Charlie Brown's teacher. It was just wah, wah, wah. I couldn't hear you. I couldn't hear you. I couldn't hear anything you said because I had already decided that this was not okay with me. I had already decided I didn't want to talk to a God that would allow this to happen. I didn't want to be part of it. What's the use anyway? I've stayed sober all this time. My dad stayed sober all this time. And this is what we get. I had made a decision. I'm out of here. Right. And so it's just kind of killing time until all of you got up and left my kitchen table. At the bottom of page 19, top of page 20, it says, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. And I thought that that meant that I would learn about Alcoholics Anonymous and I would study the book and I would become the smartest person in the room. And then I could help you recover from alcoholism. But what it really means is what happened for me that night while you were sitting around my table. And I was sure that a drink would take me out of here, and it would have. It was really necessary for me to have a drink that night. And then the phone rang and it was Krista, that little girl. Thank you, John. I see. It was Krista, that little girl that was never going to make it. And she had been drinking whiskey and taking Xanax, and she didn't know whether she should go to the emergency room or drink some more or come to my house. And she didn't care one bit about my dad. And I don't say that to be ugly. She was in the grips of untreated alcoholism. She was dying, and she didn't care what had happened to my dad. And I answered the phone again on accident, just out of habit. And I talked to Krista, and I couldn't hear what you were saying to me at my kitchen table that night, but I could hear what I was saying to her. Krista called every 20 minutes until 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And that night, Krista saved my life. Absolutely saved my life. Krista and her drunkenness got me through the next 8 hours, right? That I just knew I couldn't stay sober through. I would love to tell you that Krista got recovery, but she never did. But she never stopped coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hate that people judged that, because we don't shoot our wounded. And I no exaggeration to tell you that I'd cut off an arm to give Krista long-term continuous sobriety, but that was not to be her story. And she was extremely useful in spite of the fact that she never had anything like long-term sobriety. Krista started coming to Alcoholics Anonymous in June of 1983, and we buried her. I believe it was September of 2014, and she never had more than 6 months. She was a warrior, right? She wanted to be sober and just couldn't or wouldn't, for whatever reason, get it for any kind of long period of time. Krista was unwilling to be uncomfortable. And you can't get long-term sobriety if you're not willing to be uncomfortable. It's just part of it, right? But she saved my life. And every time she would come back into a meeting, I would think, oh, thank you, God, she's not dead, right? And then one day she was, and it broke my heart. Alcoholics Anonymous is not for people that need it. And it turns out it's not even for people that want it. Alcoholics Anonymous is only for the people that do it. And the doing it is just this 24-hour period of time. I take the action that is in front of me to do, right? And all of the rest of it belongs to my higher power. It is all his business. And when I go through the next minute or 5 or 10 with that mindset, right, I have the opportunity to be of service, and I am well cared for, right? And my life is blessed. I can see the blessings, and they're not burdens today when I practice this step. So I appreciate everybody being here. It's so good to see so many people that I know that I haven't seen in such a long time. Thank you.